Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Bertanes, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another existing, exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will have a great guest here to introduce. It's Wendy Dunning. She has been named 3 years in a row in Tatler's top 150 probable doctors and who co-presented the very successful TV series, The Diet Doctors Inside and Out. And I'm very happy to have her here because, among others, she's very natural. And she has no attitude of a promi doctor. And I am very much looking forward to get from her exciting hacks, which makes makes your life better and my life, of course, too. So same thing. We have also a very interesting book today. It calls Imprisoned by Words. And it's written by one of our previous radio show talk guests, Jose Fredericks. I met him a few weeks ago to talk about this book, which is very much close to his heart, written by his own experience, which made his life much better. So stay tuned here, and we will go afterwards into a great review of super life-challenging results about diversity in the world. So let's kick things off first with a song selected by Wendy. And I can tell you, it's one song which don't let me sitting in my chair.
Dancing queen, young and sweet, only 17.
Welcome here in the show, Wendy. Again, a warm welcome from me and the radio show and the listeners here. So great that you could make it today.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Wendy, on this day where it's rainy outside and listening to Dancing Queen, it gave me a really warm welcome also for myself. And I wish we could do that. Dancing to Dancing Queen now. Is
I know.
dancing also something you like, or is it just a song you selected because you like the sound, the freshness, the easiness?
I think it's, I wouldn't say I'm, people would say I'm not the best dancer. I love to dance. Probably my daughter and I's favorite song. So whenever that song comes on, we're like, yeah, you know. So it's a
Great.
celebration for us both, I think, is the way I see it. And I feel it's a celebration of women, actually. You know, it's that it's a dancing queen, you know, it's a celebration of women that we can move our bodies and we can feel enthusiastic about life and we can feel positive about life. So for me, it's, yeah, I love the music and I just see it as a celebration and it always warms, it has such a warm place in my heart.
Yeah, your words are really hitting me, to be honest, because I think, I mean, we as women, we have so much power in us, and I often feel it a lot has been restricted from the monthly blood, which during the centuries and hundreds of years, it was something bad and something where the women called bitches or they were punished because of this. The menopause, which is something which is giving the women a kind of unattractiveness sudden, which pushes in them out of this being attracted to men, being a woman. We have so much restrictions on that. And I just want to close my introduction with one quote from yesterday. I presented at Vodafone, which is one of the biggest telecommunication or phone companies here in Germany, and too. And there was a moderator, and when I said, as a kind of just you're saying this, there was taking a photo, and I just said, "Okay, please take off all the wrinkles," just to make a joke. She said, "No. I love my wrinkles. Don't do that." And looked at me. And she said, "Oh," she said, "I'm dealing with my menopause and with my wrinkles." I said, "Oh." And it came so sudden from the side, being in a professional environment, and it came so emotional, and it really hit me.
Yeah, that's wonderful, actually. I really like that. And you're quite right. When I was living in Canada, you can change your doctor very easily. And I was a young woman in those days, and suddenly there was a shortage of women doctors. And when the women hit 50, all the women that had had a male doctor started to come to see me for the menopause. And I didn't like to tell them that I didn't know much about the menopause at that point. I was a typical young woman thinking, I hope this never happens to me. But I soon quickly learned, but it was because they really didn't feel heard, unfortunately, at that time by their male doctors. And what I found was I needed to hear them and help them to reestablish their lives and refine their lives with this change, you know, and to find out, you know, those things that they'd relied on before, how could we improve that, and how could we move into that gracefulness of being a slightly older woman as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it is a little bit like they're pushed out of the group of women, or they feel still like this, no? They're not belonging to this anymore, or they feel punished and they can't talk with it. The body does some weird things, feeling hot, feeling cold. This is a change where I think a lot of women have to deal with what is sexiness? What is this still my body? Am I still female? Or, as a lot of men finding m women then attractive if they can give a baby to birth. This is from the old, not from the old ancient times. And sometimes I think it's just in the subconsciousness, but it is a little bit something which is untalked, unwritten, right?
I think it absolutely, and at the same time, I think you know that what it brings with it is actually a moment of not having to always have to think about how you're looking, actually, but actually move into that gracefulness of being, you know, a slightly older woman and actually being empowered. Get up and dance. You know, if I want to do something, I can do it, you know. And I think that's the other piece of it is to empower that place in women that this is, you know, they don't have to worry about the fact that they're going to get pregnant anymore. And they can actually, you know, move into that wonderful part of life where they have a little bit more freedom sometimes to actually do some things that really matter for them.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, medical question. I think, I mean, a lot of people saying, I mean, there is not a real menopause for men, but there's also a kind of change in the mid-age for men, isn't it?
Oh, definitely there is. And I mean, and it varies as to what age that shows up. But we talk about grumpy old men, and grumpy old men are grim without their testosterone. That's who we are dealing with, actually. And I'd take a menopausal woman over a grumpy old man any day. But yeah, the average age a little bit later, that's the difference. However, so the average age for men is somewhere between 60 and 65. Historically, what's a bit as scary these days is that actually when men are really dropping off their testosterone in younger years now than they used to be. So that age is actually creeping down. And I see men in their 50s who are really struggling actually. So it is there. It shows up differently. Men don't get the hot flashes, night sweats. They don't want to pick up an axe and throw it at someone. They just get seriously grumpy, actually.
Yes, you're right. And often it comes along also with mental health diseases. It comes often along with the Haggard's Gray, all these things, which gives an attitude, is an attitude of, or is a kind of signal they're going old, getting old. And it's interesting. I see it with a lot of men too, that there, this phase of getting older gets earlier and earlier.
Yes.
What would you say? Is this something which comes because of nutrition, of our way we eat, and we get along with the digitization, or is this something which is just visible to us because we're dealing more with medical things and we see more the cases where it hurts?
I think it's a number of factors. It's a good question. I think you know the number of factors are historically, and we've got good evidence for this, men don't look after their health in quite the same way as women do, in fact. So they, you know, and so a woman might come in at 40 and want an overall health check. Men often will wait till they're 50 to get an overall health check, you know. So, and that's a generalization. Don't get me wrong. There are some men out there that really look after themselves and, you know, and good all power to them. But actually, society does not totally support them being looking after themselves, you know.
If they say more, okay, if somebody's looking after themselves, they say, oh, maybe this person is queer or is homosexual or is maybe a bit too selfish. I mean, what is this about selfish if somebody is just trying to make himself looking attractive or is it in the foreign ages?
And keep himself healthy and well, you know. And I love that, you know, so that the men are starting to look after themselves. But right alongside that, we have, you know, the fact that men are, they also, we have, what we call endocrine disruptors. These are chemicals in our environment that are actually disrupting our endocrines in our body, and that endocrine means hormones in our body. And so for women, we see it in women as well because we see a lot more polycystic ovary disease than we always used to. But for men, we see it both in the fact that their testosterone levels are dropping and scarily, their sperm counts are dropping. And that's an endocrine disruptor.
Yes.
I think the other factor actually is that it is the stress. So I see it quite often in men who are working in the city. They, you know, they're working extremely hard. They're expected to work ridiculously long hours, and they have to keep on that, you know, on that job. And that really takes a toll on the body. And, you know, when I see that, I say to these guys, I say, look, you need to have an exit plan. This is a young man's job. You need to be thinking, because this is, you know, we know where this is headed.
Yeah, you're so right. And if I look, for example, at my own career, I started in the consumer good business. Nobody was brave enough to say that he needs more than 2 days holiday, because we all knew that we would have punished them. And we all knew that if somebody would have said that he doesn't like to limit the flight frequency, then they would have said, okay, you can stop. You can, here is the door. Leave your job. And there are 20 people waiting for this great consumer goods job. So we didn't take care of us. It was just, we used our body as a kind of machine or instrument. Just as long as it works, it works. And sports was a kind of luxury, because it took too much time. And it is still for many of the people in my environment that sports is something they say, yes, I should do this, but not I want to do this. I should do this. Yes, I think I must do this. So sports is something which is a waste of time for many in the head, which is costing a lot of energy. It's not positively seen. Where comes this from?
Yeah, I think it's. Thankfully, that's changing a bit. I think certainly in England, it's because we didn't have any sport. We didn't have enough sports facilities, actually. So that ability to go and do sports once people had sort of graduated out of university, where there was, you know, sports, and that changed certainly in England with the Olympics in, you know, where suddenly there was an import of energy into making sports much more available to the population. And I do see that changing, that workplaces are now incorporating sports. They're making it easier for people to get to the gym. They're encouraging they're encouraging wellness checks with people, checking on how much sports they do. But actually, the other piece with all of that is that starts at school, and the attitude towards sport starts at school. You need, and this is my biggest gripe actually about state schools, is they don't have enough sports incorporated.
Yes, exactly. Same here.
Is it? I was really, I'm so disappointed to hear that. I thought it was just in England. It's just because if you don't get the attitude for sport when you're a young person, you're certainly not going to get it in your later years.
Exactly. It's so important. I would say it's important to do it every hour, to do a small sports exercise, to give the young people especially an idea that they have to stand up, go around, best in nature, just to learn breathing, walking, freshening up their mind, to get a pause. And I completely agree with you. So I have plenty of questions about how you started, why you started, what are your hacks and everything. And we go further after the break, so stay tuned and we continue in approximately 3 minutes.
Wonderful.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I'm super happy that we have Wendy Dunning today with us here in the talk show. And I have to mention this because it super impresses me. Wendy is member of the American College of Advancement in Medicine. She's member of the Royal College of General Practitioners, the Canadian College of Family Practitioners, the College of Medicine, the Independent Doctors Forum, and a group that meets to discuss bioidentical hormone therapy monthly. But in addition, she also founded a clinic. She went to India for half a year to learn Ayurvedic. She understands a lot of about holistic medicine, but also menopause medicine. And she was, I think you're also a TV doctor, because you were the host of a very, very successful TV series, and you wrote different bestseller books. So here is Wendy Dunning. And Wendy, I haven't asked you when we started talking about what brought you to medicine. I mean, I wrote your father had cancer, but that was a time where you already were a great.
I was already a doctor then. Yeah, I was attracted to medicine when I was quite young. It was felt like a calling. And I made a decision to be a doctor around the age of 8 or 9. I was lucky, though. Yeah, I was young. At the time, I said to my dad, I want to be a nurse. And my father recognized my qualities and said, you'll never be a nurse. You'll have to be a doctor. And that's not because, I was top of the class, you know, and he was really saying to me, it's not, I mean, I think nurses have the most amazing job. So that's not what I mean in that statement. It was more, he looked at me and said, you need to up your game. You can be a doctor, you know, and thankfully he did, because what happened was that I was clear I wanted to help people. I wanted to help people with their health. Mm-hmm. And I had all sorts of people telling me through my teenage years that it wasn't a career for women, that, you know, I should be a dentist. I said, have you ever seen me with my hands in fine spaces? You wouldn't be saying that.
So my parents wanted me also to be a dentist. And
oh, God, I would have been a miserable dentist. I mean, I bless them. Thank God they do that job, but I would have hated it.
Did you do an internship as a dentist? Oh, I did. And it was really, I'm very sensitive with smelling. And it smelled so bad out of the mouth of these people that I said, oh, God, I can't be a dentist.
No. So he was, bless him, he really said, you know, and then every time someone would come along and say, you know, I'd say, like, that's all I want to do. You know, that's it. I'm going to be a doctor. And I just kept my eye on the goal and, you know, and pursued it. I think it's fair to say that I grew up in a family where we had a real interest in sort of alternative health or complementary health, if you like.
Right. Where does this come from?
Well, interesting. My father had a long-term back problem. Yeah. And so whenever he had a problem, he would call in either his spinal surgeon or his osteopath. It was an acute, we would have the osteopath, more kind of chronic situation. He had to have a spinal fusion eventually. He had an injury when he was about 30 with squash, playing squash. But it was always in the acute situation, the osteopath came in. So that was on my father's side. And actually, my aunt, his sister, was a long-term patient. She was diagnosed with polio and thyroid disease as a very young girl. So we also grew up with that side of things.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, quite interestingly, my mother was influenced by her own mother. Her mother was a juvenile diabetic and actually was alive in those days where there was no insulin. And actually what happened was, in those days, you had a lifespan of about 2 years before you died if you did not have insulin. And she was on this extraordinary diet, which was Dr. Allen's diet. He was like the doctor to go to if you're a juvenile diabetic. She managed on 600 calories a day. Wow. And when it came to the sort of 2 year mark, she was still alive because she had high discipline and was still alive because that was it. But she was definitely not doing. She weighed about 50 pounds as a 14-year-old girl. And my great-grandmother wrote to Frederick Bunting, who was one of the people that won the Nobel Prize for insulin, and said, "My daughter is dying. Please, can you trial her on insulin?" Because she'd seen a little cut in the newspaper asking for volunteers.
Ah.
He said... Yeah, it's interesting. He said, "I'm not taking children." She went to visit him and she said, "You will take my daughter because my daughter's going to die. And I've already lost one daughter to TB." That was the timing.
Oh my God.
That's what people died of, things like that in those days. "And you will take my daughter." And he couldn't really turn her down. So he...
Very good.
Yeah. So she went on to insulin, and actually she lived on insulin until she was 71 years old and died. She had three children through cesarean section. She had an extraordinary life. And so that really influenced my mother about health, nutrition, lifestyle, eating well, because she wouldn't have lived to 71 with just the insulin. You need to do the other things with it. You need to exercise. You need to eat well. You need to do all the other things with it. So I think it's fair to say I had all of these influences coming into my life, and you know, and they've stayed, you know, that influence has been powerful in my life, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine. Do you have siblings which went a similar way?
Well, that's interesting. Funnily enough, my brother is a professor of infectious diseases, traveled around the world talking about fungal disease. So he's a well-known in the medical community. He's quite well-known for that. I have two cousins, both doctors. One's a child psychiatrist and one is a public health doctor. Also, both have made kind of, you know, changes in the world with their profession, actually, both of them.
Would you say that is the family who rooted this with talking about these things, being open for it and discussing it also at home, practicing good food, good nutrition?
I think that's true, because then my other two sisters both study psychology. One of my sisters is a psychotherapist, extremely good psychotherapist. And the other sister actually has set up a whole... She's very concerned about the environment and has set up a whole business called the Naked Larder, empowering people to reduce their plastics in their daily usage. So I think as a family, we are one that like to make a difference. It was nice. I got an email from a patient last night who I have not spoken to for about 14 years. And he emailed me something about one of his children who I'd been looking after. And they're all grown up now. Or whatever, and he thanked me and he said, "I trust you are still changing the world." And I thought, how nice is that?
Super heartwarming and great that you get people like that. But I mean, you are doing a great job, Wendy, and also that you look into Ayurveda. I mean, Ayurveda is a very, very old medicine. It is based on herbs. It's based also not only on medicine you drink or you take as a tablet, but it's also based on the mental health. And it's interesting how that comes together. And we here in the Western world, we got so disrupted from that. What do you think? Why is it in India, in some areas of India, so based and so stable with this unifying this together, seeing it in a holistic way? And why are we distracted in this Western world from this, what we learned in the past, like from Hildegard, from Bingen, from homeopathic medicine, from all these ways, which we're treating it in a nice way already?
I think that's it's a very interesting question. So Ayurvedic medicine, you know, takes in the physical, the spiritual, the emotional, and in a very holistic way. And I think what's interesting about it is it works better in India, and that it works better in India because there's a backdrop in India. Everyone still has a spiritual practice, really, for the most part. And that's actually the piece we've lost here. And that spiritual practice in India is not necessarily, it doesn't have to be Hindu. It can be Christian, Hindu, Muslim. It doesn't actually matter. It's more the belief that there's something bigger than yourself that actually you can, you know, work with. And I think that's the piece we've lost here. It's the spiritual side. And also I think the other piece that we've lost here is actually that whole integration of looking at people. Mm-hmm. And which Ayurvedic medicine does, traditional Chinese medicine, which I've studied for 2 years, and is also something where they look holistically at how the body functions. And in fact, you know, if you look at Chinese medicine, they would only pay their doctor historically. This is historically. They would only pay their doctor if the doctor kept them healthy. God, if we had that system in this country, every doctor would be broke.
We'd be unemployed, yes.
Actually, because we're not trained to keep people healthy. We're actually trained to detect disease and to treat it when it comes, which is okay because we need that as well. But it wouldn't work well to try and keep people healthy, which is why I find it, as much as I love the National Health Service, I always think it's actually not a health service, it's a disease service.
You're so right. And why can't we change our system into a prevention system which tries to keep people healthy from childhood? Why are we starting our health system, or have we changed the health system into a one which is not curating?
I think it's, you know, for instance, one of the things I do with every woman that comes to me at the menopause is I do a bone density. I want to see what that woman, and I want her to see, more importantly, it doesn't matter what I think, I can advise her, but in the end, she needs to take responsibility for her bone density, for her bone health. And I like to do it when they hit the menopause, because that's the time where you can actually engage with people and say, look, you're already in a situation that's not looking good for your future, you know, so let's make the changes now so that you can, you know, so you're not going to have crumbling bones when you're 80 or whatever, you know. And and I, you know, I would often try and send them back into the health service to get that done, you know, to get that done by their health doctors, and the response will be, well, they don't have a fracture, they don't have back pain, so they don't need it. But actually, it's such short-sightedness. And I understand why it is, because we put our money into disease rather than into health. But it's such pity.
Yes, exactly. And it's funny because when I wrote, years ago that Kim Kardashian is putting into her beauty exercises and everything 15,000 euros a year, I thought, oh my God, this is a lot. But nowadays, if I would count what I spent on health over the year, it might be the same with treatments, Ayurvedic treatments, with medical things I can't get back from the insurance, with osteopathic things I pay for, with everything I do for my body. And nobody I mean, the public insurances, the private insurance won't pay for that because they're not used to have the system of prevention. But you pay this for yourself, and it is a shame that insurances don't get there because, I mean, the more you take care of your body, the less they have to pay.
Exactly. No,
Do
it's true. And you know, it's really true. And I think, but I say to people, you know, you need to invest in your health. However that works, you need to invest in your health, because if you don't have health, you don't have anything. You know, you can have all the money in the world, you can have all this and whatever, but if you've got poor health, you know, it really impacts your daily life.
Yes, that's right. And Wendy, I mean, if I think about your life, I mean, you could move forward with a brilliant TV doctor. I'm sure you could you can brilliantly move forward as a bestseller author, but also as a clinic director. What are your plans for the next year? What have you planned for the next future?
Well, I stopped doing the TV work because I became a mother, and within the space of 3 years, I had three children. And I always talk about that book as being my first child, because when you write a book, as you know, it's like giving birth.
Yes, exactly. And there's a lot of up and downs in between.
And all the ups and downs in between, exactly. So actually, it's really interesting that you asked me that question, because now my children, as this year finishes, because I've got one child doing his A levels, which is the final exams in England, and the other two doing GCSEs, so that's the 2 years before they finish. And they are, so I've got sort of, I feel like I've got to get through this year. And then I'm kind of, you know, from the summer onwards, I have really kind of, my mind has expanded back into that desire to get back in the world and to really, you know, to really educate back. And that was what attracted me to go back in, to do the TV work, was because it was an educational program and it
Exactly,
was.
that's what I mean. And I mean, you are perfect in this. You can explain very easily, and I think many of people should have deserved it to listen to you.
Well, I really loved it, and so that's my plan, and you know, it's already starting. I've sort of put it out to the universe, and I always think, you know, the universe then responds, you know, in its own time. So I'm taking a trip to India with a number of, you know, people in February. We're going to be looking at Ayurvedic clinics, and so that, and I hope to do more of those trips. You know, I have some lectures planned. So, and you know, being on radio shows, I like to do that work, and TV shows, and I do get asked to go on things, and as long as I feel it's making a difference, I'm really happy to be involved.
Maybe when do we have to talk further about this, as we already discussed, and see if we can make something together, which would be wonderful.
I would love to, Annabelle. Would love to.
Wendy, unfortunately, we come to an end for today's radio show. Really, unfortunately, at a run. But it would be great if you could give maybe three hacks to our audience for how to live a better daily life. Maybe beauty, wellness, well-being hacks. What comes to your mind?
So the three things that come to mind are, make sure you get adequate sleep, 7 to 8 hours sleep a night. There's very good evidence that if you don't get adequate sleep, you will not have the health that you need to have. So don't compromise on your sleep.
Very good.
Really important.
I found
Make
it
sure.
boring in the
Yeah, it's and most people are compromising. They think, I'll catch up later, you know. Sleep. My mother always said 8 hours sleep a night, and thank God she did throughout my childhood, because it stayed in my mind. Make sure you're drinking enough water, because
Super important.
so important for energy. People think, I'll have another cup of coffee, and they get actually more tired in the end. So really make sure you're drink. And whatever happens in life, make sure you have a positive attitude, because your thoughts are so important for how your life plays out. Whatever it is, you try and see the positive side of it.
Yes. Thank you so, so much, Wendy. And the fourth, I would like to breathe with you, because breathing would be my number four. And I'm sure that you have there also great practices for us from Ayurvedic. So we need a next radio show with you. That's something for sure. And thank you so much for the time you spent here. I'm sure that many listeners would like to ask also further questions. I have a couple of this left. So let's think about a further series. And thank you so much. We stay in contact. And now we get into a small break, and afterwards we continue with Imprisoned by Words.
Thank you, Annabelle. Thank you both so much. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tennis Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck. Fish and chips. Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
After having heard a lot about health, we move now into mental health. And what is better about talking then about communications when we talk about mental health? Because communication is such an important instrument we have. We can do so much with that we should go deeper into that. So Imprisoned by Words is a book which is written by Joss Fredericks. You see here his signature on the book. The only way to change a sentence is with new vocabulary. That's what he says. And we would like to get now closer into this, figure out what he means with that. And I would like to take you on the way now to know a little more about what it means imprisoned by words. His book is a profound exploration of how our everyday language shapes our experiences and outcomes. Drawing from his expertise as a psychologist and communication as specialist, Fredericks highlights the importance of being mindful of the words we use. He presents practical strategies for expanding our vocabulary and refining communication, offering readers tools to achieve clarity and stronger interpersonal connections. The book is an engaging read, filled with thought-provoking anecdotes and actionable advice that make it accessible to both individuals and professionals. Fredericks' insights are particularly valuable in a world where miscommunication often leads to unnecessary conflict. And if you want to know who is Joss, he is an accomplished psychologist and verbal communication expert with over 18,000 client interviews to his credit. His career reflects a passion for helping others unlock their potential through clear, ineffective communication. His curiosity about human interaction has driven him to ask deep, probing questions, shaping this understanding of how people express and often misinterpret their thoughts. As a thought-after speaker, he helps individuals and organizations improve their outcomes by mastering the art of conversation and self-reflection. He wrote this book to address a fundamental issue, the disconnection between what people say and what they mean. Inspired by years of observing how subconsciousness verbalization reveals deeper truth, he developed his book to help readers think before they speak and become more intentional in their communication. Frederick's views vocabulary expansion as not just a linguistic skill, but a gateway to broader personal and professional success. The book demonstrates how mindful communication and a richer vocabulary can transform relationships, self-expression, and personal outcome. And I would like to give you now, as you know, 7 key tips from the book. First, curiosity drives clarity. Asking thoughtful questions enhances understanding and connection. Second, expand your vocabulary. A broader lexicon leads to more precise communication. Listen to understand. Focus on truly hearing the other person, not just formulating a response. Fourth, subconsciousness verbalization matters. Pay attention to the words you use as they reflect inner thoughts. Reflect before speaking. Avoid impulsive reactions by pausing to think. Tailored communication. Adapt your language to your audience for better impact. And daily self-inquiry. Regularly ask yourself what you want to achieve and how your words align with those goals. And I want to close a review about the book with 5 quotes from the book. What we say is very often not what we mean. Curiosity is the cornerstone of every meaningful conversation. The right words can change outcomes, but first you must know them. Listening is not waiting for your turn to speak. It's understanding without judgment. And speech comes naturally, but thoughtful communication is an art. And I have to smile a bit because I know just Fredericks, I said we met during the Frankfurt Book Fair, which is a worldwide well-known book fair. And there we had to talk about his book and had a coffee besides. And he's a really great guy. I really like him with his warm attitude and his really deep understanding of people. And I could read what he wrote me. But it's very personal, and so I would like to switch to the chapter, What Have You Got to Say for Yourself? Words are singularly the most powerful force available to humanity. We can choose to use this force constructively with words of encouragement, or destructively using words of despair. Words have energy and power with the ability to help, to heal, to hinder, to hurt, to harm, to humiliate, and to humble. No matter where you currently are in life, whether you are in a good place or a challenging one, it is your choice of words that have put you there. That might appear to be a big statement, but it's a fact that people do judge us by what comes out of our mouths. What else have they got to go on? We can talk ourselves into trouble. It's easy to do so. But we can also talk ourselves out of it. It depends on how intelligently we use our words. Wherever we are in life right now, it is our words that have put us there. Just think for a moment where you might have been right now if you had a better vocabulary. Has your use of words held you back? Have people put a label on you based on the way you speak? The good news is that this can change, and you are the pilot. As infants, we learn about the impact that our few words have on our parents, whether it's mama or dada. The warmth, gratitude, love, and appreciation we receive from them from our saying our first words teaches us how powerful they are. In our early school days, when we are given the chance to speak in class, marks us out as someone who can use words effectively and positions us as a future communicator. Words well spoken give us recognition. Without a doubt, words are the most powerful force in the universe. Words are what cause people to act both for good and also for bad. I've often wondered that if we did not have any vocabulary, what sort of thoughts would we have? If we were unable to describe the way we think with words, what would our thoughts look like? Thoughts are the internal dialogue we have with ourselves to solve problems and to make decisions. Most of the time, our thoughts are silent. We rarely think out loud, but are we missing something by keeping them to ourselves? As an author, there is something that I've noticed. When I've been interviewed and I have to respond to a spoken question, unexpected and unprepared for, I can produce a far more comprehensive answer. It seems to trigger access to deeper and hidden memories in the brain, which come to the surface in a fluent and unexpected way. And then spoken. Brain has to respond instantly to a spoken question and will often surprise us with its answer. We often think, where did that come from? When we speak an answer, we very often say things that we might not otherwise have thought about. In 1948, the poet Auden wrote, "Don't ask me what I think until I've heard what I'm going to say." Quite profound. It seems that the brain does a deeper search when it's asked a random question and then produces a far more fluent answer. Very often we hear ourselves giving a surprisingly good answer than if we were just reading a question. So the question is, would we fool the brain into going into that mode if we were to speak a question to ourselves instead of just thinking it? I'm curious. I'll call this subconscious verbalization. I believe that self-talk is a very powerful tool and helping us to think better and perform better. At the start of each day, we have an open book of possibilities. Our day can be whatever we choose, good or bad, amazing or challenging. The first word we speak at the start of the day defines our attitude at that moment and will trigger what happens next. You are the pilot. Don't leave your day to chance. Choose your first words with care. Personally, first thing in the morning when I get up and walk past the bathroom mirror, I look at myself and smile. Well, why wouldn't I? Starting the day with a smile is a good start. If you verbalize something positive at the same time, you will get double of the benefit. Just try it. The thing about self-talk is that it has to be just that. You actually need to verbalize your words, not just think them. Spoken words have a stronger effect on the brain than just thoughts. Of course, people around you might be concerned to see you talking to yourself. So you might not want to practice this on the bus or your way to work or on the conference or even on stage. What is the most powerful self-talk? It is when we challenge ourselves with a question out loud. Then speak the answer. Your brain is now an active participant in your conversation. There is another aspect of self-talk, and that is, it can help demolish barriers to sharing your deepest thoughts. Picture this. A young lady of 13 years old came to my practice together with her mother. She didn't want to be there, but her mom insisted that she should come. She was facing a hard time letting go of her emotions, and she wouldn't talk about. Her mom knew that it was blocking her in many ways, and was convinced that professional help would make a difference. They both came to my office, even though they knew it would not make any difference. We greeted each other and took our places in the room. After a little introduction and a small talk, I asked her what she's here for. "I'm not going to talk," she said. "I don't have any problems to talk about." I ignored what she said and we spoke generally for 10 minutes, but I was not able to break through the barrier she had erected and get her to engage with me. This frustrated her mother. She was smartly, very smartly dressed. Everything matched perfectly, and I complimented her on it. She started to smile and talked about her interest in fashion in a relaxed way. However, when I changed the subject back to her, once again she blocked the conversation. Then I had an idea. I took out some hand puppets from the Muppet Show. I asked her which one she wanted, and she chose Kermit, the frog. She also picked puppets for me and her mother. From that moment, she started to speak in Kermit's voice and took on his character. We started to improve a dialogue between us all. This broke down her barriers and she was able to talk freely about herself. This form of self-talk, talking through a third party, can help to make a difficult situation easier when you are talking for somebody else rather than about yourself. We kept using the puppets for communication and it worked super good. This became our preferred method of communication. After several sessions, she came up herself with the idea of talking straight with me, and the puppets had been an icebreaker. Thoughts can become trapped if we are unable to turn them into words. Words, when spoken, can demonstrate how we feel and share that we with others. Our words will determine how they then react to us. In all circumstances, your choice of words determines what happens next. Choose them well, from the first word you speak to the last word you speak before you go to sleep. Self-talk is valuable. If you don't have Kermit to talk to tell us what thousands of people do, and have a conversation with their dog or cat, they're incredibly good listeners. So what kind of day are you going to choose to have today? There's no luck involved. It is all your choice of attitude as expressed in your words. When you broadcast those words to those around you, you are telling them how to react to you. Will today be just another day at the office? Exhausting? Disorganized? Overwhelming? Insufficient time to do everything? Stuck in the wrong habits? Or will today be exciting, full of opportunity, purposeful, satisfying, educational, amusing, calming, loving, caring? The choice is yours. And before I end, I would like to read the last chapter here. I often ask colleagues in my office about their use of self-talk. Interestingly, when trying to come up with a solution to a problem, many of them use a form of self-talk and have an internal two-way conversation within themselves to discover the answers. They whisper the conversation so as not to disturb those around them, but it still counts. Ever tried asking yourself an actual question out loud? You might be surprised at the results. There are two types of self-talk, positive and negative. Actually, we need both. So go there and try the best and overcome the language barriers with that. And that brings us now to the end of today's talk show. And I hope you took a lot with you about health and mental health, about the development in your life, about what medicine you might should take and how to go more into prevention than in curation. And I hope that you took also some ideas with you about communication, which you can put straight ahead into your daily life. So remember, this time is a gift for you to discover new inspiration, embrace exciting insights, and find the motivation to love life to the fullest. So don't hesitate to get involved, also actively. Your voice is valued, and together we can make a difference. Thank you for being part of our community. And until next time, keep shining and empowering others. Together we rise.